I'm in the home of Rosie Schwartz at 257 Brunswick. She's been here since 1967, but from 1950 to 67, Rosie lived at 255.
What about the grocery store?
Brunswick. We'll talk about that. Oh. So Rosie has been in this neighborhood since 1950. She's an authority. And Rosie's just saying... Since 1940?
Yeah, I lived at the corner.
Oh.
This is what I'm trying to say.
Okay. So tell me that.
Well, my parents had a grocery store there. We moved in there in 1940 from college in Beatrice. And they had a grocery store there. We lived... there was four of us and then five. We lived in two and a half, three rooms downstairs and rented out the rest. And me and my brother, we started working when we were around 11 years old, you know, delivering orders and bootleg booze and whatever. Well, in those days, you know, you made 2 cents on a quart of milk. What are you going to do? And my mother was, she resume, was an excellent cook.
Okay, you know? So 1 minute. So in 1940, your father had a store.
Your
parents had a store. It was a grocery store.
Yes.
At college in Brunswick.
No.
Where?
At Sussex in Brunswick.
Sussex.
The corner here.
Okay.
That's what that picture is.
And you lived...
Behind the store.
Okay.
Like everybody did in those days.
Okay, so you lived behind the store. So you've been here since 1940.
Yeah.
In this neighborhood. Fabulous. And your family lived behind the store, and you used to work in the store at a very young age.
Oh, yeah, after school. My God.
Yeah. So tell me again who lived... You said... It was very crowded living conditions.
Not really. I mean, when we lived on Clinton, so me and my two older brothers slept in the pull-out couch. I mean, it was just accepted.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you weren't out on the street. We never knew hunger. So, hey, my parents, you know, in those days, that generation, you didn't gamble, you didn't drink, you didn't... Maybe you went out once every 3-4 months at a Jewish something at the... Victory Theater or whatever it was called then, you know. But never felt crowded because eventually we were five kids. It's just four more kids to fight with. That was tough. But, you made your own fun. Most kids did. And I always say to people, I never had a toy. I never had a doll. You never had a doll. I said, no, I had brothers I could beat up. What do I need a doll for? So...
Do you have any idea what prompted your parents to move to this neighborhood?
Well, they lived at, still know the address, 682 College, just on the corner of Beatrice, and they were there for 2 years, and the building was owned by, it's a grandson, Reisman, but not Rose Reisman, pardon me. But we lived there, and the grandparents lived there on the third floor, and it was just the war started, so they wanted it because in the back was a huge garage and you could put all kinds of junk there. So in those days, you had to move, and that was it. So they moved here. All I know, in probably 1942, they bought that corner for around $2,500, but that was a lot of money when you don't have any.
Oh, yeah, it was a lot of money, yeah.
Yeah, so that's why they ended up here.
So you grew up here, you got married here, you divorced here, you're still here, you're 80 years old.
Yeah.
And Brunswick has been your home for many decades.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
This has been my home. Brunswick has changed, well, the whole world has.
Okay, but would you just talk about that?
Well, when in the 40s, if an older person... So, first of all, the Jews didn't mix with the non-Jews. You had a few non-Jewish customers, but like the house on the corner, southwest corner of Brunswick and Sussex, there's an old, what's a cottage, like really a dump, but there's an old English couple there, been there from day one, and my parents wanted to buy it because they bought the one next door. It was, you know, whatever. They would never sell to a Jew. But that's okay, because when he died... A Jewish guy bought it.
But they were explicit about that?
Oh, when those days you had it in your deed not to sell to Jews or colored or oriental. And I think Frost had that removed. I'm not sure what government had it removed.
And when you were growing up here, I gather it was predominantly Jewish when you were a young child.
Oh, it was predominantly Jewish probably till around the late 40s, 50s. And even then, you know, everybody, you know, they saved money like mad and they moved up to the bungalow.
I know.
And we were going to move up there. And we looked at a house. It was very nice. And then my dad, the rest in peace, like he only had, he had one hand, but when he had to hit us, he held us between his knees. So we survived. But he had a hand like a baseball mitt.
What happened to his other hand?
Well, in the, I don't know, before or after I was born, so it would be early 30s, 31 or 33, he had a horse and wagon selling fruit and vegetables, and he was in an accident. And in those days, you know, it was a welfare case, so he had gangrene and everything, and the arm came off.
Wow. But he lived a long, productive life after
well,
that.
Well, he had a stroke at 48, so.
Uh-huh.
But he was very, very heavy. Oh,
God. Yeah.
Anyways, yeah.
But okay, so Rosie, where any other kinds of people lived here when you were in school, did the families mingle? Did you play with other kids?
I mean, yeah, we played with other kids.
But I mean the non-Jewish.
Not really. The only one to, well, when I went to high school, then you played not with the Anglos, but the Italian kids. And I know in public school there is one or two black kids. You played with them. And the teachers were terrible. I mean, you know, you used to cringe. And you, well, you know, you didn't say anything because you'd be next. Because they weren't crazy about Jewish kids.
Oh, so the teachers discriminated, you're saying?
Well, and also the principal. The old principal, Mr. Miter or whatever his name was, he was deaf or anything, but the secretary of the school was very empathetic towards immigrant children. Very good. Plus, he had some good teachers that understood. Because they knew if the kids didn't behave and they had to tell their parents, the kids were dead.
So the parents always sided with the school.
Yes, you didn't go there to have fun, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And you had some very good teachers. The second principal, McIntosh, when there was a 100-year anniversary, nobody went to the room to visit him. Because what he used to do, I was in grade 7 or then, me and other kids, so he used to snap our brassiere thing.
The principal of the school did that to the
Yeah, girl. McIntosh. So who can tell your parents to say, I don't believe you. Well, didn't that happen with the kids who were sexually abused?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you know, okay. So, nobody went to see him. And yet, the grade 8 teacher, Mr. Scott, I didn't know he was still alive. This is in the late 80s. And there were tears in my eyes. And in his, too, he saw all these kids.
Yeah.
He was, like, you know, Canadian, but he was a human being. He understood. And
so you're talking about Mr. Scott.
Yeah, grade 8.
But not Mr. McIntosh who did
oh,
this
God,
to the girls.
Oh, God, no. McIntyre.
McIntyre. What a horrible thing. Right now he would lose his job for sure. Maybe go to jail.
Not really. They'd get him in the corner and they'd finish him. I got the small ones. Sorry. Yeah. So that was that.
When your family moved, did your family always live by itself, or were there sometimes borders when your family lived on Brunswick?
Yeah, well, down the corner, we lived on the first floor, and there was rooms upstairs, so for unfurnished, so they rented the whole thing.
Right, right.
I think at some point, because he took a room off the corner in the store, and then we moved upstairs and rented. And you have to understand, in the 40s, there was, God, I forgot her name. She was from one of the islands in West Indies or something. So she was black. And nobody ever rented. But we had black. I hate that term. But anyways, we had three families on a street. And they were neighbors, you know. And she was very, very nice. And she was going to university. And she had a boyfriend who was going to university, but at night he worked as a typesetter in those days. I said, well, why is he doing this? It's because he felt even you have a good education, you've got to have a trade, mm-hmm. which is true.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, you rented out a couple of rooms. There was one person when you came into the grocery. In those days, the grocery store was like a community place.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah, like, you know, here you go. They don't know. So you knew everybody, and, well, I didn't see Mrs. Cohn. Go see what's doing there. And, you know, if she's sick or whatever, who knows. And Mr. Sinclair, he had, you know, he had polio as a kid, so he shuffled. And so he comes in the store and he says to my father, he says, do you know where I can rent a room? Like, you know, furnished room. So my father said to him, because my father was handicapped too, so he can have empathy.
Yeah.
He says, I'll tell you what. You take a bath every day, keep yourself clean, and I'll rent you on the third floor, the room.
Uh-huh.
What was it? $4, $5 a week or nothing. So that was okay, you know? So then when my parents sold the corner, not my parents, my mother did, my dad was passed away. So my mother bought a big house on Kendall. Mm-hmm. Excuse me, that was a lot of money. In those days, 22,000, you know, in the 50s, early 50s. And that was a rooming house. So then my mother, when my mother's second husband passed away, so he lived. Now the basement, the room there was nice. It was paneled, and there was a toilet in the basement and a shower in the basement, you know, because previous owners were from Finland, so they had a steam bath.
About this man who had polio?
Yeah,
St. Clair. So he moved with your family?
With my mother. My dad passed away. So then when my mother sold that house, my brother was, oldest brother was going to take it over, and he was going to make a move. I said, don't you dare. Because I remember my father telling St. Clair when he first moved in, next door, he says, Miss St. Clair, as long as I'm alive, you'll always have a where to live.
Oh, so you wanted to uphold that?
Well, I told my brother, you do that, and I called the inspector.
Oh.
No, really.
So, but you were honoring your father's word long after your father had died.
Yeah, but even just to be mentioned, you know.
So, you know what I'd like to come back to? You said that.
See, it's a good thing you're a social worker, because I go
all over the place.
Well, 80 years of, you know, garbage.
Yeah, lots of stories. Not garbage, good stories. But you said that the corner store your parents had was like a community center or something.
Yeah, people would come in.
Okay, I want to hear more about that.
Yeah, say after the war, they would come in and say, Schwartzy, I need a job, and what do you do? So, you know, you phone, and I don't recall, maybe did get people jobs, maybe he didn't. I don't remember. And then you had the guys who wanted a dime for a glass of beer at the Brunswick. So they'd come in, and they knew they wouldn't get the dime unless my father would say, well, okay, just wash those shelves over there. Now, we're talking about people who are making 15 to 20 cents an hour, you know, whatever. And, well, just an hour's work, do this, do that. And he'd give them dime, or he'd make them a bologna sandwich because they were hungry, and give them whatever the pot was. I know, the cheap pot. So they knew Schwartzy would out, not that there were so many, but what he called, they would get the dime. Also, in those days, like, okay, for our family, my mother always picked out the bruise stuff.
Uh-huh.
And we ain't good, you know, what is a little bruise here to... But sometimes you, when you're trimming veggie, you would save, and a poor... You know, the family was poor. In fact, it was the Marshalls that had her, I don't know how many kids. Who knows? And they would pay a quarter for a big... Not even a quarter, for a big potato bag full of stuff. Mm-hmm. And the only reason they charged a quarter because they're... not dignity.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, like, wow. So really you're saying it was like charity, but you charged them something so they felt they were like everybody else and they were paying.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
So
it was like
different.
It was a community, and it was like a social service agency.
Well, sort of, yeah.
Lovely, yeah.
And you don't forget there was a grocery store on the other side. Major had a grocery store, Kitty Corner, and except for Robert, there was only one on the on the southwest corner.
So
they were all those stores, and they all made a living.
And these were all small, personal, family grocery stores.
Yeah, they lived in the back, and then Loblaws came along. During the war, they all got credit from my, you know, because they only got a pittance of a check once a month.
So explain that credit. Tell me
well,
what you're...
Well, it would be written down. Like, say they bought something.
Yeah.
They didn't buy like you buy now. And then when they got the check at the end of the month, then they would pay it off. And sometimes they couldn't pay it off. So fine, there was like a running, like a credit letter, like a letter of credit or something.
Yeah, yeah. But they knew your father, and your father knew them, and he trusted them.
Yeah, you know, sometimes you went after them.
Yeah.
If you can't pay the $10 or whatever it was, $2, yeah. Like Epis, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So, then Loblaws was where Honest is on the corner, southwest corner of Bloor and Bathurst.
There was a Loblaws there?
Yeah.
Where Honest Ed's is?
Yeah.
Okay. I never heard that. Yeah.
Well, that's another story, too. Honest Ed's. Anyways, so they would sell something a cent cheaper, which was a lot, or 2 cents. So that's when they went by. Well, our parents used to send the three older kids to Loblaws to buy that stuff because my parents would make 2-3 cents on something. So it was a joke. Anyway, it wasn't a joke, but...
So did that affect all these corner stores when Loblaws...
Yeah, because they only came to the stores for credit. Pretty well, not always, you know.
Did your father stay in that business until he died, or did he get rid of the business because of Loblaws taking the customers
well,
away?
Well, no. I don't have the time date when they gave it over to someone else, and then my father was doing nothing. He was like in his late 40s.
Uh-huh.
And how many times there used to be, even the old cigar stores was a community place. Zeitz used to be on Zeitz? No, not Zeitz. They were on Harvard. And so, you know, reopened the store, and that's where he had the stroke. It kept him busy. Mm-hmm. And my brothers didn't want to come and help. You know, like just, you know, move cases or something. And they lived next door when that was reopened.
But, you know, even already you've given me some charming stories. Like, if somebody wanted 10 cents to buy a beer, your father would say, okay, I'll give you the 10 cents, but do 20 minutes of work first.
Well, there wasn't time on it. Just
sure, but they had to earn that money.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So your father, they knew they could... Would likely get the money from your father, but
or a sandwich or a bologna sandwich,
yeah,
because they were hungry,
so they'd work for it.
Yeah, like when they come for the Boy Scouts or whatever, or the students, you know, because they make 30% if they sell something, you know, knock on the door or anyone over the phone. Because I worked for Mark, I had maybe 25 jobs, and each one was better, more, whatever. I can't think of the word. Anyways. So then the Boy Scouts, he used to make me mad. I said, you want to make money? I said, years ago, when I was a kid, they would come and clean your yard, do this, do that, and that's
it. They'd earn the money.
Yeah. I don't know. Or, you know, when they come in, they say, and all sorts of things. Now I put the sign up again, leave me alone. I said, I don't give my family money. Why should I give you any money?
So, Rosie, you talked about all these corner stores, and you live quite close to Bloor.
Yeah.
Could you talk to me about the stores that were on Bloor?
Oh, it's great. It was most of them lived in the back. Mom and Pop. I call them, you know, the Mom and Pop.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any left on Bloor. They're all beer places or sushi or whatever. And so...
So the owners don't live behind the store or upstairs from the store?
Well, they hire kids for $10 an hour.
But what were some of the stores that were here?
Fruit and vegetable.
Uh-huh.
You know what? I can't even... Clothing.
Any rest theaters?
Well, there was the Midtown, and I remember when that was built in the mid-40s. They said it was built turn of the century. Full of crap. The mid-40s.
Uh-huh.
Early 40s, during the war.
So is that where the Bloor Cinema is now?
Yeah.
So that's been there a long time then.
Well, now they changed it.
Yeah,
and
they just...
And
just...
I met during one... They had something around 2 years ago, and... Then they introduced some lady, her husband was the manager of the theater. And this is like, you know, in the 40s or 50s or whatever. I said, did your husband have a mustache? And he was... And I had... My memory is shot. She said, yeah. I said, oh, he was very nice.
Oh, I see. You remember her.
No, as a manager. Yeah, like, you know, he was eventually.
Yeah, yeah. So you talked about... the corner stores, a lot of corner stores, your father being...
Oh, two drug stores.
On Bloor Street.
Yeah, and Shoppers just, you know...
Wiped them out.
And there was one on Brunswick and Harvard and one at Borden Harvard. They made a living.
Yeah.
They didn't get rich, but... That's
so you're saying that Loblaws and Shoppers really changed things for all these small store owners.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, slowly, not right away.
Yeah, yeah.
Now they say business isn't good. You know, you see for lease, for rent. That's crap. Who can... How much do you have to sell to pay a rent of $6,000 plus rent for a 2x4 store? The politicians never say that.
Yeah.
You know, it's nonsense. Because then there was a beautiful cheese shop there. The lady
where?
Was...
Where was that?
On Bloor, just the second block.
Okay.
With a big cow in the window. Do you remember?
I remember that, yeah.
Lovely, from Georgia, Russia, or whatever, you know. She was so happy because we were playing a Georgian film at the Bloor Jewish Film Festival, and I got her 2 tickets when it was all sold out and everything. She couldn't believe it. She wanted to give me a big hunk of halibut because I usually bought it. I said, no, just give me a little piece. Like, you know, I don't...
I love halibut.
Oh, we were kids used to... In a pail, used to be in a fridge. We used to eat all the... Anyway, so... I lose blank.
Okay, so... we've talked about, but what about Harvard? Were there any stores there?
Oh, yeah, there was a...
What was that?
A fish store and 2 bakery shops, or two fish stores and 2 bakery shops and Tenenbaums.
Okay, so 1 bakery shop is still there. That's Harvard.
Yeah, that's that miserable son. Oh, he's terrible. I forgot the last name already. The father, I remember seeing him in the latter years when I used to go in there. And he, like, you know, he got up 3 a.m. to do the baking, and he worked hard. The son, he was like a teacher, who knows. The daughter, the one daughter worked, like, forever, and I think she's still there.
Susie, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Very quiet and everything. And then the son adopted someone from the Philippines, some kid, I don't know. Yeah. But, no, I never go in there. You know,
but there was you're saying there was another bakery on Harvard.
The Brunswick Bakery on Harvard and Brunswick on the north, how do I remember, north, yeah. West, east corner.
Yeah, yeah. But certainly that has changed the number of restaurants. Yeah, yeah.
And now the restaurants are, you know, the soups are $5 a plate. I said, I'll sell you my soup for $3. My Kenzie's love my soups. In the winter I make soups.
So the people who live here with you now, you have students living here?
Yeah, four.
Four students. And do they have access to the refrigerator?
Their own kitchen on the second floor.
Oh, okay. So you have 4 of them with a bathroom and a kitchen. So this is your space on this floor.
And also I have a shower in another basement. Now the basement is a cellar.
Uh-huh.
Now very few kids, if they come from the bungalows, which is so... But the toilet and the shower room and everything is all tiled and really nice. I don't like it. Day and night from all the junk in the basement. Yeah, and now they leave the end of April. The school term is over, except one is staying for May and June. And then I have my old handyman who was marvelous. He used to do the cleaning, the gardening, whatever I wanted, you know. My son used to ask him, he says, Dan, doesn't my mother drive you nuts? And my son would answer, Dan would answer, but your mother pays me.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a job, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I had to make him vegetarian. Well, he liked my vegetarian meals for lunch.
But you're saying that you sometimes make soup?
In the winter. But
you'll share it with them. You don't cook for them, but you'll sometimes.
Oh, no. Yeah. They would like me. What happens... A lot of time, like there was a time when, whatever I made, they took. Because I make, how can you make a little bit of something? But in the last few years, I had one Chinese student. He loved my soups. In fact, I went to his wedding in China because we still keep in touch and everything. And
you went to his wedding in China?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, quite a trip for a wedding.
Well, it was worth it.
Yeah.
No, because I went 2 years, 3 years earlier on a tour, which tours are all right, but, you know, leave me alone at 7 a.m. You know what I mean?
They start too early. What languages, what did your family speak at home?
Well, when my parents were fighting, it would be Polish. Otherwise, it would be Yiddish, and with us, it was Yiddish and English. Uh-huh. But we didn't speak Yiddish back. And now I wish, you know, I had the joys of Yiddish. You ever read that book?
Yeah, it's lovely.
Oh, I keep reading it over and over.
It's a beautiful.
And this, when my uncle and family lived on Major after the war, so I had to speak Yiddish. And if I went to Israel to visit, which I've been there, whatever, for, I don't know how many times, I had to speak Yiddish. But then if they feed you all the time, it's very limited what you have to speak.
But you heard a lot of Yiddish, except you responded in English to your parents.
Oh, yeah. Yes. It's like Italian kids. They don't speak Italian back, unless sometimes, but not.
In the years since you've been here, what are the different waves of immigration, and who has been here at different times since you've been here since 1940?
Well, as far, you see, your area would be Harvard, Bathurst.
College?
Yeah,
college,
no, not Spadina. College. It would sort of be...
Oh, your area was where you lived.
Yeah, you know, you played with the kids and everything, you know, whatever, you knew the people. What's it called? Anyways, casement area, is that it? Not casement area, I don't know.
Yeah, that is a term that used to be used.
So that's who it was. You played, mind you, played with from school, because I went to Lansdowne. Uh-huh. And in fact, I was on a baseball team.
Oh, my God.
Did that horrible, what do you call it? Principal.
Right. Oh, that's him?
Oh, yeah. And I was good at baseball. I was good at... I was a very smart, like... At the Y, I played a lot of badminton. I was very good. Even when I was 6 months pregnant, I still beat two people on the other side.
So you were an athletic person.
Oh, yeah. Baseball, basketball, just at the Y, yeah. We played the...
I want to come back to languages and waves of immigration, and we'll come on to the other.
Okay.
We'll come back to the other.
See, am I easy? Because I know I...
But you come back.
Well,
when
I'm
ask
surprised
you
I have a memory. I mean, that's unusual.
What's that?
The memory part.
It's changing.
Well, with neuropathy and probably taking the depression pills, who knows, but neuropathy, you really are talking and then boop, the blank.
Yeah, yeah.
And
what's that like when that happens?
Yeah, but I'm all right, but that's another story.
Okay, so you're saying that at home, Polish when your parents fought, and Yiddish and English, and the other kids around, I guess you all spoke English when you were on the street.
Oh, yeah.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, almost.
But the waves of immigration, who was here during your lifetime? Here?
Jewish and Anglo.
Uh-huh.
And the Italians were down by Beatrice. I mean, we lived there where it's only five Italians.
Okay. But so you being here, south of Bloor, not very many Italian people here.
Oh, hardly any.
Okay. And Portuguese?
First was Italians in the 40s, in the late 40s. Mm-hmm. And they were dying like flies on construction places. They even had a separate benevolent society for the widows. It was just awful. They were getting fucking hour.
So they did construction and...
They were responsible. The Jews were the builders and they were the workers. And the same, now the Portuguese, they sent them out to Kitimat and put the railway line Northern Ontario and this and that, and they got paid $1 an hour. But then eventually...
How many bucks an hour?
One. And then at the end of the week, you had to give $5 to the, what they call the Munji foreman.
Right. But you're saying that there were a lot of accidents and people were injured or killed.
In construction, the Italians were mainly... These were all mostly men from the south who were farmers.
Right.
I remember when I lived here, so they rented to three Italian men and they were short, like, you know, the ones from Sicily or wherever. And that's the first time I ever ate proper spaghetti with sauce, because we used to eat Heinz and thought that was great.
Yeah, but they beat it.
And they were very nice, and they worked very hard.
Yeah.
Anyways.
How has Brunswick changed in the years that you've been here, which is many, many years?
Well, it was all right when the families were living here, but I would say at least half. Maybe, I don't know, I didn't count. Say 30% are non-ownership and they rent out.
To students?
To whoever.
So, and that's a change. In what way does that change your life?
Well, if they're, if because most of them are single, and especially students or in their 20s, they think because they live in downtown in Toronto, every night is a party night. Now, next door, my brother owns next door. He rents it. My son's supposed to look after it. So they would, I don't know why it was 30, and these are kids from going to university. They would play music. Now, this is double brick between the two, and my bedroom is there. And I would hear boom, boom, boom. So I called the cops. Cops came. I said, before you go in there, come into my house. And they're standing in the hallway. What's that noise? I said, that's from next door. So they went in. And first of all, they didn't hear them even knock on a window. And then there must have been around 80 people that were running in the, out the back, out the front, like you, they could have been in the Olympics. So, and then it stopped for a little while, and then boom.
So you're saying the rentals, they don't care about the community. They don't care about noise.
No, not no, no. Like, say, Crossroad, there's three-row housing. It's very quiet, like down here. On that side, it's quiet. I think there might be, next door, it's not too bad. They've had a couple parties. I've gone out in my pajamas in the back. I said, come on, cool it. And one girl or, young person says, you're making most of the noise. So I went from my property, went up to her patio. I said, pardon me, but who said that? And then,
so she backed off.
Well, yeah, and then they were a little bit quiet.
Yeah.
We want to have some fun. I said, fine, go to Hyde Park. Leave me alone.
Yeah.
And you see, Transat Club, the Brunswick, and the patio. Well, where do you live on board?
South of Harbert.
Oh, you're lucky.
Yeah. So I've certainly heard about the Brunswick House. Transat is noisy too.
Oh God.
Oh, so you have a lot of noise, especially once you start sitting on the front porch or opening your windows.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, you can, in the front, and especially. If I have students, and you tell the aldermen, in fact, if you notice, only part of that patio, there's over 100, that's about one of the largest patios on Bloor.
You're talking about Transact.
Futures.
Oh, Futures, right.
No,
oh, yeah, right.
Now, the Brunswick wanted a patio, and I was the one initiated no patios. And one day I said, let them have it, and they could sit and drink your beer and watch the animals across that Futures at 11 at night. They weren't amused. Where did they get the money? I don't know. And when he finished, close at 2, and they come down the street, I don't know, there's no cops. They get into cars, are they swearing? And once I said, is that what your mother taught you? And then the odd time someone will apologize.
But you live with a lot of noise, is the bottom line.
At night, Friday night, and when school's out, university finishes, okay. Because, the more you drink, the louder you get deaf.
Yeah.
The more you drink, you get deaf.
Drinking affects your hearing. In the years that you were here, your father had that corner store. Were you aware of any kind of cottage industry? People working from home?
Yeah.
What kind?
Tailors.
Uh-huh.
Mostly, my mother, she made wine or something. That's a cottage industry, not really. And, people sold linens. You used to pay every week so much, and you would buy, sheets or whatever you need. Like things you worked out of the home. And also manufacturing, because, they do that now. They take to sew up stuff, they take it home.
Uh-huh.
In terms of other things, I wouldn't know.
But tailoring, being...
Tailoring and... I remember one lovely Scottish lady on Sussex, on that side, she was a big lady. And she knit it for $2-3. She would knit you a sweater. I mean, that was... And when she knit it, everything was perfect.
Okay. Yeah. So she had her knitting business.
Well, I mean, how much can you make? You didn't make big money. It was just... So, I mean, in terms of the cottage industry...
Not too much.
No, not like you have now. I mean, not just...
From what you remember... Were mothers working outside the home, or were mothers mainly taking care of their children?
Mostly at home.
Uh-huh.
there were some like working in, usually on Spadina, in the manufacturing, or where they took in the children to babysit for them. Mm-hmm. What do you call it? Four doors down. She took in children, but they were, you know, there's no rules, so they played in the basement. I'm sure it wasn't finished. And he sold eggs on a bike. And he used to say, here comes Taya Maya Matiaya.
Very cute.
And he sold, you know, bought eggs. After, when I moved back here, he would have a truck full of pears and apples, like fruit that wouldn't go bad, and he sold it from the truck.
So what were there some foods that were delivered?
Grocery stores. If Mrs. Cohn forgot her celery for her chicken soup for Shabbos, we had to run in, you know, just along here, and to deliver it.
Right, yeah.
Yes, sir.
I got it.
Well,
do you have all this stuff?
No, collards. I'm not that.
I'm wondering what you have behind your house and what a lot of these people have and how you have used these through the years when you were raising your family, when you were a child. What's behind the house? Gardens, garages, what?
Well, first of all, I didn't live here. I lived in a flat for around 4 years. And when I moved back here, there was a big double garage. Don't ask me why. The roof was going to fall down, and I told my younger brother, do me a favor, I got 2x4s, fix it. So I wake up one morning, it's on my car, the roof. Anyway, that's okay. So don't ask me why I tore it down. It was crazy, but I did. So next door, he was getting rid of his garage. I said, how much do you want for the garage? He says, $200. I said, okay. So the guy who had the front loader moved it over to my space.
Oh.
Somebody get it wood. Anyways, okay. I started growing a few vegetables, flowers, and like tomatoes, corn. Corn really grew, but the squirrels loved it. Just some fruit there. Please help yourself.
Thank you. Maybe after. So you're saying you used your back garden for growing flowers, vegetables, fruit.
Yeah, like the front used to be grass, and forget it with the tree.
Yeah.
That's the second tree because someone hit it with a car, the first one. I didn't show the cup. Like down the street, one neighbor, you know, they had a plant and they planted evergreens here. Not every, but, you know, bush. Like, you know, it's really nice when it's new. So meanwhile, to me, they had the big sale on flowers. Impatience. I bought a whole. So, where's that?
So these are pictures you took that.
Yeah, but I don't do that anymore. I mean, I can.
Yeah.
Because when I was.
These were beautiful. Oh my God. So how long ago was this?
Oh, around. What's the date here? A long time ago.
Yeah, okay.
But I did it for till around 5 years ago.
So till you were 75.
Yeah, but then I didn't have the clay, you know.
Yeah.
And you don't see all the junk.
But it's beautiful. Now, oh, my God. Gorgeous garden.
Well, not, if you look at it now, while we were growing tomatoes and beans and everything. And this was the front. That was Kitty Cat. And she was part Manx.
Part what?
Manx, you know, without the tail.
Oh, okay.
That's another story. But anyways, yeah, so after they did all that thing, so I went to Lawa's, got a bunch of flowers, and I didn't know they were going to grow so big. But
so you had flowers in back, and breadfruit and vegetables, and beautiful flowers in front.
Yeah, and then I used to have at least once a week or 2 weeks, you know, have a barbecue with... doesn't look that good now, don't worry.
Okay, but you're saying when you were younger and more vigorous...
When I was healthier, yeah.
Yeah, that you used your back... You made it very beautiful, and you also fed people there.
This yeah, my beautiful. Friends and I, you know, I would provide the main course, and they would bring the rest.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm glad to have these pictures.
Well, I have my own pictures. Yeah. So,
and when you were... Oh, these are lovely.
But now, you know, the garden, the yard is a mess. I've got pansies. I planted in 2 pots, and I was, like, wiped out. Like, I could... If I go from here halfway to Bloor, I'm exhausted.
So your health is poor.
Well, the breathing, whatever. I know? That's another story.
Okay, when you were growing up here, when you were 12, when you were 10, Did you use the back of your home at all?
I didn't live here.
So where did you live?
The corner.
Okay. So there was no back there?
There was a backyard there, and we had... Remember, my mother bought one of those... Remember the swings?
Yeah.
The B1? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And so when we had time, we would, you know... But my mother liked... And he didn't take... People said, why don't we have more pictures? I said, who had cameras? Like, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So on the... There's three windows in the front, and there would be three... oh, here's Marcia, my postman.
Yeah, post girl.
Yeah, I gave her, you know, for Christmas, and she gave me 10 stamps and a special thing and thank you and everything.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, so they'd be full of flowers, and they were really, you know, she was very good at whatever word. And you could reach them from the windows. So that was always very nice.
I just want to come back to the gardens and the front of the house. Yours was a store. When you were with your friends, say when you were 8, 12, 15, where did you hang out? What did you do?
On the veranda. You never went in the house.
So the veranda was...
The veranda outside. You played on the street. There were hardly any cars.
Uh-huh.
When you were, I'd say, up to around 12 years old or whatever. 13, 14. No, by the time you're 16 on a Saturday night at someone's house, you know, they'd have a... I didn't have a record player, but they would bring a record player with the thing and they'd serve some pop or something, you know.
But you're saying it was front... People lived in the front. You're talking about the verandas.
Oh, yeah, they're always sitting on a veranda.
Yeah.
And you always heard... I don't know what it is. God bless it, Jewish brother. You could hear them calling their kids... Timessin, Maisha, like you could hear, and you know, and then you would have, the fishman would go, I don't know, before, maybe, he would push a cart with ice
and fish.
Yeah, and he would yell, bite fish, bite, like, yep. Those are sounds of the street.
Yeah.
And you get that in the, what's that movie? Sounds of the street, and then watermelon. Like, what? No, whatever.
Say it. I want to hear how he said it.
Oh, I don't know. Oh.
Kim Essen is one.
Moisha! Like, this is the 10th time already.
Right, I'm not going to call you again.
Yeah. Anyways, and, you know, watermelon, watermelon, and then you had bite fish. Now, you had the real religious Jews. They couldn't work anywhere because they had... to have a horse and wagon, and I forgot what they would say, but you bought rugs for them because they would pick up the rugs from rich homes. Now the ends weren't worn, they were more money, and you had like runners all over the place, but the middle was very cheap because it was worn out.
But these, they traveled along the streets with wagons? Horse and wagon.
We had milk and bread. And hey ho tea delivered by wagon. Hey ho tea, they would have a pony in a little wagon selling tea.
I never heard that one.
See?
Okay, so tea and the watermelon, all that stuff was being horse and wagon.
No, watermelon and the fish was carts. You pushed a cart.
Oh, they just pushed a
cart. Yeah.
I'd love to have some pictures of that, but I don't.
I know you don't have. And also... ice, like people had ice boxes.
Uh-huh. And how was that moved on the street?
By a truck. And, you know, that was hard work because half the place, I'm sure a lot of places they'd go to second or third floor.
And they would have to carry this big hunk of ice upstairs.
Oh, yeah. And those kids used to wait because he had to chip it and we'd get the ice, get the sawdust off it, and, you know.
And what?
And put it in our mouth, you know, it was cold.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like... Oh, God, around years ago.
That's wonderful descriptive stuff, by the way. It's beautiful. Oh. I can picture it.
Well, also, one day coming back from a meeting from Cecil Street, me and my friends, it was around 10 years ago. And in those... 10 years ago, or 20 years ago, because the Italians were moved in and they were fixing up everything. And they threw out all kinds of old dressers and everything because it was junk. And we're coming up major... And they're throwing out this wooden ice box. Oh. And I was with a friend and his wife, Josh, and I don't know who you remember. So, and we asked the people, do you want, oh no, a ticket, chunk, chunk. Okay. Except the rollers were broken. Anyways. So I said, okay, Josh, let's toss, because we both wanted it. Let's toss, see who gets it. Well, I won. Well, he was like, you know, not me. If I would have lost.
Yeah, but he was upset to have lost.
Yeah, so because he had to help me bring it up here. And it hardly rolled because the rollers were. So meanwhile, like my mother would say, God sent an angel. There was a guy there in the front of his bike. He had two wheels, but it was you could put junk in the front. Mm-hmm. I said, amen. What are you doing here? He says, oh, I'm doing what you do, picking up junk. I said, oh, well, how much you want to take this? No, I told him, take this up to here. I said, I'll give you a buck. He says, sure, lady, anytime.
So he brought the refrigerator, that ice box.
Yeah, I mean, it was heavy.
I'll bet.
But for him, yeah. So he put it in the house, and 3 days later, I see a cockroach crawling. I said, Paul, put it on the ground and get it out of here. So when he moved, got married, it's his. Everything is his. I have a beautiful pew from the shul down here with the brass numbers on his side.
Right from the Nariver here.
Yes, yeah, and yeah. No, not Nariver, the Giltiana shul.
Oh, my God.
So
wow.
We paid $10 or something. Then they were giving them away because nobody wanted them. But it's like the one, he has one there from downtown that's a piece of garbage. But no, it's enough, you know, my son. I used to have it there. It was great.
So it was a pew from the shul.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Where was the Galitziana shul?
Right the corner. Here. Brunswick and Sussex on the northeast corner. Right here.
So that was a long time ago.
Oh, yeah. And then the Sephardic group, like, you know, bought it. And
so that became a Sephardic shul?
Yeah, when he first started coming to Toronto. And I don't know if you ever heard when they're singing Friday night or Shabbos.
What?
It's beautiful.
Oh, yeah. Because you're saying the Sephardic tunes?
Well, no, the religious. Yeah. No, the religious tunes.
It's, yeah.
Because when I was in Israel, I stayed with a distant cousin, and she's right next to my ashram. And two doors away was a... I said to her in Yiddish, I said, is that Sephardic? She said, yeah, it was beautiful, especially just before I was there for Rosh Hashanah or something. And it was just like, wow, it was great. So when they sold, so I was going in there, and all of a sudden a guy took an axe, and he broke where you have the Torahs. That's, you're supposed to do that.
One minute, you lost me.
You know where you have the Torahs?
Yeah.
So it's a wooden door in front where you open it up. And
Yeah,
those doors.
The Aron Kodesh.
Whatever. Anyways, yeah. They split it with an axe or a hammer. I don't remember. And that seems to be the custom. But for me, and I'm a secular Jew.
I've never heard of that or seen it in my whole life.
Well... You ask.
Yeah, I will.
No, it just was like a knife in the heart.
Yeah.
And I, like, you know. Anyways.
So you never went to any of these shuls, but you enjoyed the music that you heard from the outside.
Well, I never went to Sephardic. The other one, you go, first of all, you didn't go on the holidays because cost. Went for the, my two of my brothers had their bar mitzvahs there.
And at which one? At the Galitziana?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then... whenever there was a holiday, you know, they had for the kids, yeah, semester, yeah. Whatever it is for them,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So, anyways.
What about the heating? How has that changed through the years?
The heating?
Yeah.
Well, when we lived at the corner, there was two furnaces, one for upstairs and one for downstairs, for coal. And we had to, me and my brother, we would have to get it going, which wasn't easy. Fortunately, having a grocery store, you had the boxes from the oranges and everything to get it started. And when they were tearing down a house or something, you ran to get the slats. Mm-hmm. Everybody did.
So those were easier to start the fire with, you're saying?
Well, it wasn't that easy. We'd go out a few times before you got stuff. So then it would get going. And of course, in the middle of the night, it would go out.
Yeah.
But you see, in the kitchen, you always had a what do they call, Quebec heaters or something, you know, a round little stove.
Yeah.
Plus, you had a stove that was half coal and half gas.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, what do you call it? So that, my mother got up very, very early, put everything, whatever clothes we had on us, because you didn't have Now, I still got the Hudson Bay blankets that she bought when they started having a couple of
dollars. With the stripes?
Yes.
With the stripes.
I still use it. I won't give it away.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, my parents had that all my whole life, as long as I remember they had those.
They were warm, like, wow. So, it was cold. In the house, because it was stucco outside, the frost would be inside, especially in the kitchen where you're cooking.
So you'd but have we didn't ice freeze. Along the wall, you mean?
Yeah, frost.
Yeah.
Not
yeah,
ice, but
yeah,
frost.
Yeah.
Windows always frosted from the moisture.
And they had the single pane windows, not the double pane.
No, we had double. But that was a job, you know, putting them up, taking them down.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we were always in the kitchen. You know, in those days, everybody was in the kitchen.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
What about dating? How did you and the people in your friendship group, what happened?
Well, I didn't hardly have any dates because I was a tomboy. And I was like one of the gang. Even with my son with his friends, if they went fishing, I went with. In fact, I have a picture somewhere. I caught the biggest fish, and one guy, Norbert, I'm not even bigger, and the guy says, Norbert, shut up. And I got a picture of it. But we had fun. And I was invited to all their weddings. And they would get a bigger table. Mama Lassa, you sit right there.
But in terms of dating, you're saying...
No, not for me.
They didn't want a jock. They didn't want a tomboy.
I wasn't... first of all, I was such an introvert, or wallflower, believe it or not. I couldn't dance. And just didn't. It wasn't the...
Were you shy at that time, or you just...
No, well, not shy,
insecure,
but...
Insecure or what?
Well, insecure and everything. I didn't have...
Because you call yourself a wallflower and...
Yeah, I didn't... Yeah, whenever I went, you know, you just... Whatever. And I was never the flirt... Not flirtatious, kind of something, you know. To me, they were like other brothers.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
I was...
But then you eventually got married, so you...
Well, yeah, it was interesting. And because my friend says, come Saturday night to dance at the bar. I said, oh, you're such a meat market. Leave me alone, I'm not going. First and last time I ever went. So I met my ex-husband there. And for some reason, you know you're going to marry that person.
How old were you at that time?
24.
Uh-huh.
And of course, my mother drove me crazy. Not the mod, not the mod.
Oh, she was afraid you'd be an old maid.
Well, at one point, I had the wedding invitations in the car, and things happen. I said, and in those days you didn't talk about philosophy or whatever you want to call it.
Values.
Whatever, yeah. And I said, well, then I won't mail the invitations. Oh no, I love you. Blah, blah, blah. Okay, so you fell. But I got two children. It was a very, very bad marriage. For me, because 2 years before, I had a mental breakdown where I had the, the electric shock treatments, which is a certain part of memory you don't get. And I told him about everything. I was working, everything was all right. I wasn't on medication or anything. But he never let me forget once we got married.
So he used it against you.
And of course, I didn't have any worth because my mother always said, you're worse than the four boys. I wish I would have had four more boys. And as a kid under 10 or something, she was always going to send me to reform school. And I was like, what did I do bad? In those days, reform school was scary.
I remember.
Yeah. So there's that whole...
So you have a lot of old stuff.
That I never got rid of.
So your mother... said I should have had more boys and not you. Then your husband rubbed in the fact that you had had
I come from a crazy family and you're guilty on it. He was a Belarusian. Mm-hmm. And the guilty on it is at the back. So what do you want from there? He's just,
So you got out of that marriage?
Well, yeah, after 3 years.
3 years.
I would have gone completely. 1 week and I just couldn't take it. And I took my son, he was around a year or so. And I just left. It was a weekend. I left him with the baby, and I went to one of his friend's place somewhere in the country. Had a farm. I stayed there for 2 days. I figured.
Yeah.
I didn't abandon because the father was there.
Right.
You know.
Anyway, but you had to get away from him, you're saying.
Yeah, but I mean, I couldn't take, where would I take the kid? I mean, I knew he would look. You see, even now, one thing, he loves his son loves him. It was never, for me, was never used as a weapon. Because mm-hmm. the first thing in my mind, the benefit for the child. Mm-hmm. Where in a lot of cases, like my son would hear stories, he couldn't understand. You know, because he went fishing with his father, taking him to Florida, taking him here, you know. On the weekend, took him.
So you're saying your son lived with you, but he still had a relationship with his dad.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Even, you know, even now, well, for Passover, so I used to go to my cousin's for the holidays, but he went at his father's because his father and friends had children and everything. Where my late cousin, Blumen, they were all adults, so.
Well, I think you were very nice about that.
I agree with you.
Yeah,
whatever it was, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But then, I didn't know what, like, if my ex-husband's wife made an engagement party, shouldn't I be invited?
If she made an engagement party, for whom?
For my son.
Yes,
of course. I be invited?
Yeah.
And if I wasn't invited, my son should say, forget it. No way.
Uh-huh. So
and
that
hurts.
Yeah.
And other things. I mean, in the last few years, except for the last year or so, I would call up my ex-husband and, you know, talk about Paul, this and that. Except the last one, he said, you're going to make your son crazy just like you are. So I hung up and the hell with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Never marry a Russian from Belarus.
Okay.
Well, okay. Listen, he had a whole family killed and he had a rough time, you know, during the war.
Had his baggage.
Well,
Several other questions. One is, do you have any impression of the effect of the university on our neighborhood here?
Yes.
What's that?
I used to be on university liaison committee, and one meeting I said, you're much more fraudulent than the developers I dealt with. This was in the 70s, and they are. They cry poor, but they have millions. They bought or traded with Greenwind the Robert Street playing field. And we said, yeah, like, we want to be able to use it instead of University of Toronto School. So, you know, and the ice skating rink. And it was under, so the city paid for the upkeep of both, but they owned the property. And then, you know, in terms of us using it, and they tore down good homes. So one neighbor, I was surprised, he says, well, if they put up a fence, I'm going to attach a chain to my car and just rip it down. And you would never expect that from that person. But it was ridiculous.
Angry.
And even now there's empty space just west of Spadina on Sussex. Two homes he tore down have been empty for years.
Yeah, yeah.
And now University of Toronto Schools has to move out because their lease are, they're terrible. And if you would see what the students have to pay extra beside tuition, and the food, with the first year residence, all of your international students, forget it, is around $10,000. And if you're at the Chester Street 5-star hotel,
yeah,
I printed out the menu once, like, I'll go live there.
Yeah.
But they gotta have money. It's
anyway,
very,
but
very,
you're saying that they have, they took down homes and they're not sharing that land.
Now they do,
yeah.
But it has to be fixed, the ice skating rink.
It hasn't been used for a few years.
Yeah, because it has to be fixed.
Yeah.
Okay. And I always kept telling the residents group, get that zone parkland. Get it zone parkland. You know, it's all right. We'll always be able to use it. Well, that's not the case.
Well, there's also that place that had all that sand right across the lane from the rink. There's a big empty space that's never used for anything. I don't know if the university...
That's the tennis court, no?
No, the tennis court is the other side. Anyway, so you're
Well, that's
saying,
the empty space.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, the two homes.
Nothing. So they took two homes from there.
Oh, years ago in the 70s or something, or late 70s.
Yeah.
And also, there were 40 expressway, except one professor, you should rest in peace, Alan Powell, he lost his... He didn't get tenure because he spent a whole year with the students. That was the year the students were great.
Did he own Kensington?
No.
That restaurant? He wasn't.
Oh yeah, Major Roberts.
Major Roberts.
Right. I did the accounting. He had no.
Yeah.
God. He had no restaurant experience. It's one thing when you do it for a wedding, you're making one dish for everybody.
Yeah, right. Yeah, but I remember he owned that restaurant, right?
But,
so okay, you referred briefly to fighting the expressway. What happened with you around that?
Well, me and two other people.
Yeah.
We were the initiative of the first. Well, what I understand, the first meeting here in Street School, and Nadine Nolan said, "Who initiated this meeting?" I said, "We did." Mm-hmm. That was during one of the elections. I forgot which one. Well, 79. No, 69 or something. And then she wrote the book, The Bad Trip. So we got people involved. And in those days, I don't know if you remember, we were called, Denison called us a bunch of rabbits.
Rabbits?
Yes. They just multiply. Where'd they come from?
Yeah.
And it didn't matter what political party you belonged to, because it affected all of us, yeah, like other things. So 2 days later, someone had the brilliant and made buttons with a rabbit on it. So there was rabbit buttons all over the city.
But you're saying you really fought that expressway.
Well, they kept saying, "Rosie, you're crazy, leave it alone." My tact was to make people mad enough to do something. Eventually, he said, "Well, maybe Rosie has something there."
So you really initiated that whole.
Well, no, thing. I didn't. There was other people involved.
Yeah,
that was
you
just part
and
of
some
it.
Others. Sure, because other.
The beginning.
Yeah.
With due respect to Jane Jacobs, I was the first or second person she met in Toronto.
Wow.
Yeah. In fact, I don't know. I should give it to you. She endorsed. I ran four times. Okay. The first time I bowed out because. The local NDP candidate, and that whole riding screwed me because I didn't belong to the NDP anymore. I still support it, but that's another story. But I never answered what they wanted me to answer.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But you're saying that you fought, you were one of the people fighting hard to, and also, and Jane Jacobs, you were.
Jane Jacobs was. Not a guru. She
pretty close to it.
Whatever she said, was good. Was a grill. I mean, we have someone. I didn't know how famous she was, at that time. But you read her book, the Life and Death of American Cities. I said, "Boy, that's great."
Yeah.
But see, now a lot of people use her name, and they're gonna do. Helen's Point area, they're going to do like a Venetian city, like with canals and everything. And she helped plan it and everything. Yeah. So I happened to tell her son, I said, "Your mother sold out." Well, anyways, so a little bit later, mm-hmm. I happened to drop by to wish her Merry Christmas or something. So we start talking, and she said, she had a beautiful home on Albany. And she said, "You made me feel bad." I said, "Why?" I said, "Yes. I said that, but that's the way I felt at that time, that you were going to make canals and God knows what, who knows what and everything." And then she had two pies left over. One was a pecan pie. She said, "Would you like the pie?" I said, "Would I?"
Yeah.
So she gave it to me. Yeah, she was very...
She probably respected you because you were an activist the way she was. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And on a couple times, say when we appeared at meetings... And I would speak, and then she would say something. I says, "Yes, I agree with Rosie." I mean, I was the OMB. And the best line I ever got was from a neighbor saying, "Italian, immigrant, I'm major." I said, "I forgot her name. Missa, why don't you like it?" And she, oh God, I'm trying to remember. "Too much money, too much dirt, and too much money, dirt." I forgot what the third one was. Very succinct. Never mind all this crap.
Yeah.
So I said that, during my speech. Or a presentation at the OMB. Oh. And the one who's the chairman now, Susan Fish, or whatever her last name is.
I remember her.
Are you kidding? Oh, with Royal College. Mm-hmm. They have nearly as many students as Branson or Havergal, or one of them. And they charge a lot. So, was at the OMB, and I told the group of people, Friends of Albany, or whatever they were called, I said, don't get any professionals. Just have the neighbors explain their experience.
And they'll stay up on the point.
Well, no. Because at the OMB, when we were doing Spadina, oh, he passed away, Goodman, the furrier, he started, so the Kenny, the chairman, said, pardon me, are you a traffic engineer? And of course he said, no. He says, well, just speak about what you know. Okay? Because then now they're going to ask you. So that's what I said. I said, Lynn, do you know Lynn Spink?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, say hello for me.
Yeah.
And yeah, she got me involved with all that. It was so, and I, Susan, my God, she was an NDPer and then whatever. But she was very, she's very smart. I couldn't believe it.
Can we just talk briefly about Kensington Market?
I was born on the house on Baldwin.
Okay. So just whether you feel it's been important to our neighborhood, whether it is, just its influence and its usefulness.
Well, at first it started probably in the 20s or 30s. I think it was predominantly Jewish.
Yeah.
Because they opened up a little, they were all houses. And it was always called the Jewish market till some point they figured, well, it's not good for tourists. So some said, what about Chinatown? You know? So they, Kensington. Kensington was just a small street with houses. Only stuff on Baldwin. So that's the way it was. People probably lived in the back with the rats and God knows what else. And it was all food places or clothing. Now, it isn't. You have the chains. You have a few individuals, not chain stores, except some of them are.
More
or bars.
Yeah.
That's not Kensington.
Yeah, certainly.
Chinatown is better. I remember I was running one election, and someone said, what are you going to do about the garbage in Chinatown? Because nobody ever, especially the elected people. So that time, Dan Heap was the alderman. I said, well, pardon me, I don't have that job yet. Would you like to ask your paying alderman what he's doing about it? Which is true. And then you have a civil servant going around, they pick up paper, says, well, the litter problem is less than it was the year before, because they count what they pick up.
Yeah, right.
They're crazy.
So do you feel that it's, what do you feel is it's our connection with Kensington Market?
I don't have any.
You don't, so you don't use it?
Unless there's just a cheese shop on Kensington.
Yeah.
I used to go to Dater's. I remember Dater's, the grandmother or something.
So you're saying it used to be very Jewish. They changed the name because of tourists?
Yeah, well, then it became Portuguese.
Uh-huh.
And there's only one store. Jeez, they sold only bananas for years because the person's husband passed away. Oh, Francis's late father. And she was a widow. This is in the late 30s, 40s. So they all, the Kensington people got together and she would be the only one who could sell the bananas to make a living.
Oh, what a lovely thing.
Yeah.
Wow. And so then nobody else had any bananas?
No.
So they made it simple, but they also made people shop there if they wanted
for bananas, yeah. So then slowly, I don't know if she was, I remember her, she was, I guess it was her, not the daughter, I mean, young daughter. I forgot the daughter's name.
Doesn't matter.
Slowly starting in West Indian stuff because of you doing bananas, and now you're getting West Indian people coming in, and slowly. So now it's closed anyways. The son, he sells mostly to restaurants. He swears like two truck drivers. Oh, my God.
Rosie, what about the end of World War II? Do you remember when that happened? Do you remember what happened in the neighborhood?
Oh, yeah, we were, wow.
Tell me.
I mean, I don't remember. You've got to understand. Because of the treatments I got in her, there's a whole part there. All I know that we were very, people were happy, they're coming home. And the thing is, when the veterans came home, they had to have jobs. So fortunately, the government gave them money or land, and, they built a lot of the homes. But way out, why do I remember Brown's Line? Because that's where a lot of the veterans' homes were built. Don't ask me why.
I'm just going to ask one more specific question, and that is the general security of the neighborhood, what it's like now and what it was like 20 years ago and 40 years ago and 60 years ago. Safety, security, what about it?
Well, first of all, maybe there was one gun in the whole city. I mean, to hear someone got killed, like, wow, like, holy mackerel. Now, it's like, you know, you're scratching your rear end every day. It doesn't even fizz anymore. It's very, very sad because there are random killings, a lot of them.
But what about our neighborhood here?
It was very safe.
Still.
Well, now, I mean, I wouldn't... Well, you have tents coming home 2 in the morning. You know what? Where is it safe?
Do you feel safe here?
Yeah, you know, listen, if windows and locks only keep honest people out. I mean, that's an old saying, you know.
Yeah.
It used to be where you could leave your door open during the daytime or the back door. But there's so many crazies out there. Like, I like leaving the back door and leave the screen door, you know, closed. But I do that. I figure if they're going to get me, do it fast. Whatever you do, do it. You know what I mean? These, like, usually school, I've not even heard them, would be around 5 or 8 kids smoking pot or whatever in the laneway during school time.
Yeah, from Central Tech.
Yeah, I presume. Yeah. So one day, and around 10, 11 in the morning, I'd go out there and say, pardon me, how come you're not in school? Because you got to be nice or else, whatever. Oh, it's boring. I said, boring? Wait till you go to work. Uh-huh. That's boring. And if you're lucky, you work with pleasant people who have a good sense of humor. So that was it. And then one day, I could smell it in my back door.
Oh, boy.
So I go there. I said, okay, who has the big bucks? What do you mean? Someone bought really good hat. Because it was strong. So they laughed. Oh, would you want a pup? I said, no, thank you.
Very cute. Now, before I turned on this video, the audio tape, you started to say something about the neighborhood has become white something or other.
White-ass liberals.
White-ass liberal, okay.
You know, they put, well, look across the road, that house.
Yeah.
And he wants $1.6 million. His father built... Bathurst and St. Clair apartment on the northwest side. So there's big, big bucks.
Yeah.
If you keep it for 2 years and you sell it and make a capital, like if you make money on it, you don't pay taxes.
What, he wants $1.6 million
for but he put a lot of money in there. Like I've been there briefly.
It's beautiful, you're saying.
Well, the thing is, it's like, people want to renovate for themselves.
Yeah.
Unless they happen to like that. The front should have been, even the people to the south of it who are very nice, they said, at least he should have kept the facade of the verandas.
I agree.
It's like, and look about the house up here with the glass in the front.
Yeah.
I mean, that's some sugar. But.
So when you say white-ass liberals, that they're changing something.
Yeah, they don't like when the immigrants used to put the false brick in front and or the colors. Or whatever they did. So one of them asked, well, how do we keep the white painters? What was the expression? I forgot. How we, you know, like buying and selling, like, you know. I said, simple, just put on that false facade and nobody's going to buy. And they must be making big bucks. Who the hell can buy? You see the house set back, the blue?
Yeah.
Sold for over 8. And an Israeli bought it. So Sartani tells me, well, you know, his wife wants to live downtown. And I find out through the internet he lives in Thornhill somewhere. So next time I see him, I said, you know, Tzvi, whatever. I said, I can't think of any Jewish wife who wants to live on Brunswick's. You know, especially once you've lived there. Like, you know, then he has 2 adult sons. And so, you know, I said, I've heard this story 100 times. So meanwhile, he hasn't done anything. I don't know. It's a rooming house.
Okay. Anything that we haven't talked about that you think would be...
The change in the city, the attitude of elected officials. It's just... you know, I always say we have as much corruption as any country in the world, only it's done legally and without shame. Without shame. And when it comes to money, there's no limit. I mean, they all say they work hard. When I worked on Spadon in the office, the people who worked hard were the men and women who worked at those bloody sewing machines.
Yeah.
And you know, in those days, the cleaning woman had to scrub the wax floors. They work hard. Now they're saying that someone They make $1 million, they're working hard. Give me a break.
But anything in particular about our neighborhood that you might want to...
Yes, it's changed. They say, well, if you're near the university, you got to expect the noise. Mm-hmm. I don't accept that.
Yeah, I agree.
You got to expect the noise. I don't know. And then you got 5 minutes to speak in front of a committee. I remember there was a university, they wanted to build where the planetarium is. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, you know, they can match the ugliness of the Iran, and everybody, it is. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Bye, Nick. And then, the chow says, your time is nearly up. I said, Olivia, at City Hall, you guys can talk for an hour. You want to shut me up? Just be lucky I'm not speaking in Yiddish, and then you would have to get a translator. Okay. I think the next day the picture's in the Globe.
So. Okay. I'm going to turn it off, but before I do that, I just want to say, Rosie, it's been a pleasure. You've given me lots of interesting stories, good information, very rich, very colorful.
Oh, I'm glad.
And I appreciate it.
I enjoyed it, you know.
Yeah, and so did I.
Okay. God, I forgot the date. Women's
but just say to me, you just told me that you're responsible for Kensington.
Yeah, indirectly.
Long-term care.
Indirectly. Okay. I think in the 70s or 80s, I don't know the time thing. They wanted to rebuild Doctors' Hospital at a time when other hospitals were closing wards, and it was a moneymaker, and I'm alleging that when foreign doctors came to Toronto, Doctors' Hospital always gave them space to get the experience or whatever. So, of course, when they graduate, what specialists are they going to refer to? So, okay. Well, I went to the OMB and stalled. And even we had the lawyer Jaffrey, he didn't agree. I said, a foundation is a separate entity than a hospital. It's like a corporation. He never agreed. Well, he's wrong. Anyways, so eventually, they didn't want a hospital. And they had McFarlane, who was the head honcho of doctors, and he had a lot to do with here. And I remember at a meeting, public meeting, I said to him, I allege, and in my opinion, you're a liar and a thief. And his lawyer was standing next to him. But if you say that, they can't sue you.
But how did it come? You said Kensington. So how did you move it in that direction?
Well, they had the land. They didn't pay for the land. Miller was president, was prime minister. He gave money for the land on 200,000, I think it was, for the land on college. And also, Doctors Hospital was paid for a long time ago through the whatever the brothers were. I forgot.
Braxlin brothers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they didn't pay for land.
So what was your vision and how did you do it?
Well, there was no vision for long-term care because, I forgot, I'm starting to throw out a lot of, I've got boxes, and every time I look at something, it's history. It's part of my history.
Right, right.
But I got to throw it out. I mean, how much can you keep?
I'm going to turn this off for now, but anyway, I think the point you're making is you were influential in switching that from Doctors' Hospital.
Not switching. Delayed it long enough that they couldn't build it, whatever. I said, if you ever drop a bomb in downtown Toronto, it's Diamond College, every hospital will be demolished.
Yeah. Okay, I'm turning it off. Thanks again.